Welcome once again to The Agent's Angle, the show that seeks out all aspects of the football agents industry and the effect it has on football as a whole. I'm Jonathan Booker.
And I'm Peter Palaiologos. On this episode of The Agent's Angle, we'll be looking at the suspension of a football agent by a National Football Association following a dispute with the player and reported breaches of agent regulations.
In addition to that, we will also look at the steps reportedly taken by a German club in regards to avoiding the representation of young players by agents.
All that to come on this episode of The Agent's Angle. We're in the first month of the FIFA football agent regulation implementation, but also we've seen that there's been agent-themed conferences come up in Rome recently. Also the AIAF, the Football Lawyers Conference in Bordeaux, and next month in Wembley Stadium in London, the European Football Agents Association running a conference on agents. I think that's the 8th of November.
But before we start, there is something we only decided this morning that we wanted to bring to everyone's attention, as it is important. And in bringing attention to it earlier, hopefully we can help someone avoid being scammed. And this involves scams that seem to be doing the rounds with the issuing of fake agent licenses. Such things are nothing new, as we had people promising fake licenses pre-2015. But with the new FFAR system, it does seem to be a bit more robust in helping people avoid such scams. The only fee you should be paying if you are paying for a FIFA agent's license is via the FIFA agent platform, and it is $600. No more, no less. If you can pay on a credit card, that's all well and good, as this will offer additional protection for some. Certainly don't wire or entertain anyone with a Gmail address or similar claiming to be FIFA or has some ties to FIFA. Most importantly, you've got to work hard, sit the exam and get your license legitimately. If you think one of the many agent exam courses available will help you, invest in it, whether relatively cheap or one of the more expensive ones. But if anyone promises you a pass or a license, turn around and walk away. I appreciate some people are pretty desperate to get their hands on a new FIFA agent license, whether they've failed one or both of the exams or want to cheat the system. But what I would say to anybody tempted to facilitate one of these scams and try to purchase a FIFA agent's license, don't do it. Just don't. Yes, it damages the industry, but also it is a legitimate reason for FIFA, a National Football Association, or another sports governing body to block you or revoke any license status in the future. Also, you simply won't show up on the FIFA agent register anyway, unless you pay someone to hack the FIFA agent platform or coerce someone at FIFA to add you, which is highly unlikely with the people in that department on Luis's watch.
Luis being the head of the agents section in FIFA, and I mimic your thoughts. Everything should be done legitimately through the FIFA portal, proper exam, and no shortcuts. That's the way it's done, and that's what it's all about. The spirit and philosophy of the new licensing regime is about transparency, compliance, and enforcement. And that actually leads to our first article. It's entitled, "They Were Quite Clear, Player on Agents Trying to Force Him to Join Bournemouth from the English Premier League resulted in a split." It's an article by Naveen Ulal from the 10th of October 2023, and it relates to a player by the name of Hugo Larsson, who revealed he had to fight his agent to turn down AFC Bournemouth earlier this year. Hugo is a midfielder from Malmo's youth system. Malmo are a club who do create a lot of players over the years. I think Ibrahimovic came from that club. In this article, Hugo, who's I think 19 years old, stated that his former agent tried to force him to accept a move to Bournemouth. Now, Aftonbladet, which is one of the Swedish leading newspapers, it does also report on sport, mentioned that Larsson, or Hugo, I should say, reported his former agent to the Swedish FA's disciplinary committee for several violations. This article sort of reflects the view of the player and that he didn't want to go to Bournemouth. He didn't think he was ready for it, and he didn't want to be pushed by his agents to take that deal. Post that pressure, Larsson changed agents, and subsequently he joined the Bundesliga, Eintracht Frankfurt, and Malmo, his club, received a club record fees.
I think there's so many different facets to this story, Peter, and a lot to reflect on. Not only the potential breaches of agent regulations and those sanctions imposed on the agents in question by the Swedish football authorities, but I think there's still a lot of information that isn't disclosed, as it seems investigations may still be ongoing, whether it be allegations against the agents or indeed other parties, including clubs. There's far more to consider than what the original article and the alleged pressuring of the player over a move to Bournemouth in the English Premier League.
Yeah, I want to mention the fact that players, and I know you're in England and I'm in Australia, and we have our agent-principal relationship, which also applies in law, is the agent has to follow the instructions of the principal, who's in this case the player. So in terms of agency generally, and who makes the final decision in terms of a transfer, as in this case, it always rests with the player themselves. The two teams can always agree on the financial aspects of a transfer, but it's only the player and not the agent or the teams who can decide whether to move or not.
Absolutely. And it goes beyond that. You've got the agent-principal relationship, but you've also got the element in the regulations that an agent can't exercise influence over making someone make the move. So it's covered both sides, really, both within football regulations and legislation. But the first thing that strikes me is that this is a charge brought by the Swedish FA based on the regulations in Sweden, pre-FFAR. So my initial questions, and maybe questions that others are asking, and with you being a lawyer and also FIFA pro bono, if I am not mistaken, this is a disciplinary matter that seems to have been motivated by a dispute between the parties, but it's not the actual dispute between the parties. This is a regulatory matter, a disciplinary matter.
That's correct. This is very much a disciplinary matter against the agent after the Swedish FA received a complaint from the player. Now, the agent allegedly committed several violations, and some of those related to the player being under 18. He was only 19 when this happened, but obviously representation may have started when he was a minor under 18. And this agent did not have the right accreditation for minors for Sweden. The agent argued, and this is in a subsequent article, that they did not receive any commission. They worked for free during the time the player was a minor. However, the disciplinary committee of the Swedish FA found that there was no standard agreement between the player and the agent, which they found as one of the violations of the Swedish rules. Also, that the agent also mentioned they had maybe a mandate or something from the club to negotiate an extension of this player's contract. And the player, in his evidence, from what I can tell from the article, never recalled that the agent told him that they had some authority from the club. So taking all this into account, it became a disciplinary matter based on the alleged conduct of the agent.
And of course, when it starts to involve minors, there's different facets and different regulations and different layers to come into those regulations and those considerations. But another part for me, it seems that the Swedish authorities are holding this back, well, at least at the moment, from forwarding it to FIFA. So I have two questions here. Is this in their gift to do so, to hold this back? I would have thought it wasn't. And the second part is, what could be the reasons why they're doing this? Is it because we're looking at sanctions being levied under RWWI regulations, and now we're in an age of FFAR regulations?
I think the regulation working with intermediate versus the current FFAR regulation is a key issue why this matter was not referred to FIFA, because it could be. There's an international dimension, the actual agent who the misconduct's alleged against. However, I think it came down to maybe the evidence, the version of events. Maybe the Swedish FA wasn't sure it had all the requirements for it to be an international disciplinary matter and hand that over to FIFA. And also we had the layer of uncertainty whether intermediaries are different to now what are football agents under FIFA. Also, maybe the assessment of the Swedish FA had some gaps. Therefore, on the balance maybe of probabilities, the Swedish FA had made a decision that the agent was punished enough. God, I know this agent had a track record of doing a lot of deals in Sweden. That would have been taken into account, and maybe looked at the prior record and said, that should suffice. We're just looking at a national suspension for this agent.
And that element of an international dimension falls for me into the same category as a link to Germany. There's so much conjecture over how it can be interpreted and how it can be applied. And this international dimension, when it comes to agent regulations, there seems to be even conjecture between experienced football legal practitioners and FIFA on how that's interpreted. Now, the agent in question on this, I believe, is now registered on the FIFA agent platform under FFAR, although they're seemingly suspended in Sweden. So does their suspension by the Swedish authorities not arguably impact his licensed agent status with FIFA? Or is that yet to even be reviewed? We can ask the question. If FIFA haven't heard it, if it hasn't been reported, they might not have looked at it. I would argue that the suspension is covered, if not just inferred, in the FFAR, that suspended domestically may well impact on registered licensed agent status.
Well, I think this issue has not been addressed fully in the transitional provisions, because in this case, this agent is now registered or licensed on the FIFA portal. They would have to probably disclose what's going on here to FIFA. I think it's a case-by-case basis, and FIFA can ultimately make the decision whether to amplify that through internationally.
What I would say, this seems a pretty stern sanction by the Swedish FA when compared, in my experience, to other national associations.
Because the player was a minor at the time, and also I think I mentioned there was no paperwork, no rep agreement, those two things were probably seen quite serious by the Swedish FA in order to give the 18 months.
Now, it isn't our place to judge whether 18 months is befitting of the offences, but in my experience, the agent would have got a fraction of that in other prominent European territories for the offences that are being said here, possibly even 2 to 3 months and the equivalent of a £500 fine. But this agent's got 18 months suspension by the Swedish FA. So now that we have addressed the more regulatory and disciplinary matters, I think some in the industry may see this as a naive move by the player to report it, whilst others, dare I say, may see it as brave. We don't know when it was reported, either before or after the underlying dispute was resolved. We know how reporting matters can damage reputations and relationships in such a small, dare I say, incestuous community, such as the football world. This is indirectly against a representative of one of the biggest families of agencies in the football world. And this could lead in the future to the player finding various doors closed, if not locked to him, later on in his career. All very well now as he is in demand, but it's not unknown for resentment and a need for revenge to be held by many in the industry for many years. So could this come back to actually haunt him?
That's an interesting observation. The agent world is international, huge number of agents, huge number of leagues, clubs, players, but it's also a small world. Who's got the profile? Who's doing the deals? But now in terms of your observation about the player, yes, this agent is involved with one of the biggest agents in the world. And players have to be careful. As you mentioned, word does travel fast. And a lot of the big agencies and their networks have a lot of loyalty with a lot of clubs. They work with a lot of clubs year in, year out, transfer window, a lot of planning, a lot of relationships. So players have also got to be careful not to get, I wouldn't say all agents, but a lot of powerful agents or connected agents offside.
For me, based on the reports I've read, this to me seems a bit tit for tat in a dispute that has pretty much snowballed, and in my view, unnecessarily. But again, we don't know if the parties involved tried to resolve it through ADR, alternative dispute resolution, and mediation before it got to this stage. It seems a case where one party puts on the pressure, then the other party puts on the pressure in return. You call the lawyers, so I call the lawyers. I go public, so I report you. And the result for everyone is that they not only lose out in the short term, but they possibly lose out in the long term as well. Now, it really frustrates me when relationships between agents and player break down in cases like this and reach these lengths. In my experience, 9 out of 10 times, if not more, it just isn't necessary. We know from our experiences that you often have differing opinions with your client players about what is best. Sometimes a player client needs a push, sometimes they need holding back a little. Sometimes you weigh up the pros and cons together, And sometimes you need to reflect on your own mindset at the time. Is your mindset distorted and or is it in the best interest of the client at the time? But at the end of the day, the decision is that of any player, especially on such important things as a move or a transfer. Forcing a player client to do something against their will often damages everyone to varying degrees and in different ways. Wrong move, wrong time, wrong motivators can ruin a career, which affects the agent, the player, and the club. Just one interesting thing off the back of the original Bournemouth article that brought our attention to this is that there's another article relating to the same player and the Premier League back in 2022 when he was just 17 and was training with Chelsea with a view to a possible move, but he chose to stay at his original club. So it sounds to me that even at 17, we've got a very thoughtful player here, not chasing the money or the profile, but has a plan in mind. And maybe he just doesn't see English football as part of that plan. And that's his choice, just as many English players may not see the Bundesliga or the Allsvenskan League as part of their plan.
I think it may have been 2021, Chelsea when he was 17. Because
I lose track, Peter. I blame FFA.
Okay. There's a tradition there that Scandinavian and not just Scandinavian players go for the German Bundesliga route, and that route is very successful in terms of transition to the EPL, and that's the transfer market that people strategize, agents strategize in terms of the transfer market, and they see, let's go to Germany first, Bundesliga, do very well in a very tough league, very tactical and technical league, and that's the pathway or the transition into the EPL instead of being part of an EPL squad initially when you're maybe not getting some game time. So that's what agents are thinking. That's what players are thinking. And in this case, Hugo probably thought at that as well. And that may be the end game and that he wasn't ready at 17.
We have largely had to rely on various media outlets in regards to this story. And even then, we appreciate not all the facts will be available to us, as in the case for many in the industry and those observing the manic world of football, not least the agents. One of the media outlets we rely on quite a lot as a resource for source material, as well as validating stories from elsewhere, is The Athletic. And one of the most reliable journalists for in-depth investigative journalism on matters relating to football, beyond transfers and speculation, is Matt Slater, which leads us quite neatly to our guest on this episode of The Agent's Angle. So at this point, I would like to welcome to the Agent's Angle Matt Slater, who is a senior football news reporter for The Athletic, which for me is probably one of the most reliable sources for football news and aspects relating to the football agent's world. Before joining The Athletic, Matt spent 16 years with the BBC and then 3 years as chief sports reporter for the Press Association. Now, for those who are more interested in football gossip, transfer speculation, manager rants and scorelines, they may not be readily aware of Matt's work. He's covered stories from football finance to player data, club takeovers and club collapses, Saudi Arabia to Ukraine, FIFA to independent regulators, and of course, a significant amount of work on agents. And for anyone who hasn't seen the BT Sport film on the Bosman story, Matt is a key contributor to probably be one of the biggest stories affecting the football world and the agents industry. He's also an ardent football fan, so isn't removed from fellow supporters. But we won't go into that topic at this time for certain reasons, but hopefully there is some light on the horizon. Matt, welcome to the Agent's Angle.
Well, thanks for having me. You should be my agent, Jonathan. That was lovely.
Yeah, but I'm capped at the moment, so that's probably a bit of a problem there. As hopefully I've highlighted there, Matt, your work goes way beyond what happens on the pitch for 90 minutes or even 105 minutes.
Yeah, whatever we're up to these days.
With stoppage time nowadays.
Yeah.
But much like what we try to do with this show is look beyond transfer speculation and big money deals. Now, investigative journalism is a significant aspect of your work. Could you share one experience or story from that reporting in the football world that had the greatest impact on you?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I've been doing it a while, so I'll do a recent one then because it's just fresh in the mind. Me and a colleague called Phil Buckingham have been working for about a year now, just keeping an eye on Scunthorpe United. So at The Athletic, you know, obviously we do follow the really, really big stuff, but we do have a big staff and we have, I think, a bit more time and a bit more focus, because it is very, very focused on football, certainly the UK operation of The Athletic, to look further afield and deeper and further down the pyramid, where there's some amazing stories. And Scunthorpe United are just an example of that. Just for people that know nothing about Scunthorpe United, they're not a big team. They've been up and down the ladder. They've had some great players in the past, some great moments, but right now they're at a low, pretty badly managed for a few years. They've lost a lot of money and they've fallen through the divisions. They're in the sixth tier of English football. They got relegated last season and there's been a change of ownership. But we were looking at the club anyway, because they had previously been well run and they got as high as the second tier of the Championship, and they'd lost a lot of money. And the previous owner was quite an interesting guy in that he had lost a lot of money, you know, was running out of cash, and that accelerated the decline of his football club. And it was all just a bit of a car crash. And long story short, it led him, I think, to make a very bad decision. He basically, in our view, sold to a guy who should be nowhere near football clubs, a convicted fraudster, which he had not disclosed, guy that had used four different aliases during his career, no obvious evidence of his finances, you know, a string of failed companies or companies that had never posted any results, never posted any accounts. And he bought Scunthorpe for peanuts. The key part of the deal was the ground, as so often is the case, the property, the land assets. And that deal collapsed. He got control of the club, poured money onto the pitch, got the fans on side, got them winning again, but stopped paying bills. And it all unraveled. And a large part of Scunthorpe's fan base, who had basically been taken in by him, seasons and seasons of losing and having this very unpleasant relationship with the previous owner, this guy, if nothing else, made them win. And that was enough for many fans. What we were trying to point out to them was that this is a classic out of frying pan into fire situation. And if you are not careful, this new owner is going to kill your club. The last guy has seriously endangered your club and made you very fragile and vulnerable. But this guy is bad news and will, you know, drive you over the cliff. And I genuinely believe that's what was going to happen. I think it's what we've stopped as well. So the end of the story is basically that we reported what we reported. He admitted it. His relationship then with the fan base just exploded in lots of different ways. He didn't react to it very well. And he's sold the club. He sold the club quickly. And you know, there are various investigations going on right now into his conduct over the last few months. But that club, I believe, now have the chance they should have had 8-9 months ago. And you know, I think that club has a future now. It's going to be difficult, but they have a future. That's an example of a piece that I think made an impact. And you know, fingers crossed.
I think that highlights the importance of, shall we say, owners and directors tests and tests of good character, and making sure the right people are involved in the game. Now, some agents, whether founded or unfounded, fall under that categorization as well. And we have the test of good character within certain regulations. But also, there's some common misconceptions about football agents and the normal stereotype, shall I say. In your reporting, when you report in relation to football agents, how do you address those stereotypes and those misconceptions?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I should probably add that obviously the guy in question denies many of the things that we've put to him. You know, we shall see. And as I say, there are some investigations ongoing. Your question about agents is bang on. There are a lot of ideas and preconceived ideas about agents. I mean, I don't mean to upset you too, but when you think about sort of unpopular groups in football, it's you lot and it's us lot. Journalists, agents, you know, referees, that sort of thing. You know, we're the bad guys. And it's funny, whenever I've written or any of my colleagues have written about agents, particularly if it's sort of a kind of governance, a regulatory change, the world's smallest violin springs to mind. You know, there is very little sympathy for you guys. And there is this idea that you are all coining it in and you're taking money out of the game. That comes up again and again and again from administrators, and from clubs and owners, investors. And fans, there's this idea that, you know, there's this amount of money, a finite amount of money, and you are taking it out and you haven't earned it. And there's, you know, what value are you adding? So that's the most fundamental thing to address. What value do agents serve? how do we make the case for agents? I think that's the interesting thing. Sometimes you, I'm being like you lot, do you help yourselves? You know, the few times where agents really become the story, does that agent then try and sort of think kind of holistically, look, you know, all right, there's the specifics of this story, but, you know, come on, generally speaking, agents do this, 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 this is why we're here. That doesn't really happen. So like no one speaks for you guys, which I think is interesting. So that you have a kind of reputation problem. And I think, okay, let's take it right back to sort of basics. Who are the stars of the show, right? Who are the genuine stars of the show? Who gets us excited? Right, players, do we agree? Right, players. What do we want our players to do? What do we really want them to focus on? Like being good at football, right? We all agree that, right?
Absolutely.
So we all agree that they're the stars of the show and they should be properly rewarded. And we all agree that we want them to concentrate on being great footballers. So is there not like an obvious need maybe for someone to help them, for someone to advise them? That there is perhaps a time for a third party, for some sort of independent advice in your career, right? And I think then most people would go, yeah. Most rational, reasonable people can sort of say that we definitely think that footballers are the stars and they should be paid the most or, you know, receive a great big chunk of the wealth that's out there. We can see the need for sort of independent, impartial advice. We're definitely kind of aware of the idea that people could be exploited and people have been exploited in the past. So it's almost like the case for agents is there. It's there. It's always there, but just no one ever voices it because I go, the excesses of your industry. So I suppose that's, if I do anything, if me and I think my colleagues do anything, it is at least to frame any story about agents, at least within a fair context that, no, they do add value. Good agents do look after their clients. Good agents do make sure that players aren't exploited and are properly remunerated for being stars. And also advise them and handle bits of their lives so that they can like concentrate on being footballers. And if we all agree that those are the starting points, then there is a place for agents, right? So then we can have a more adult conversation about the role of agents, the scope of your power, the scope of your, you know, how much you should earn. But at least we agree that there is a place for agents in the ecosystem and that there are good agents and bad agents, and we want more good agents than bad agents, right? So if we all agree on those things, then that's kind of how I approach it.
Matt, recently, I've noticed a trend where a lot of agents are working with journalists or are close to journalists in order to get some stories out. What information do sports journalists want from agents? Is it exclusive news, a well-sourced background or backstory on a player, quotes, an insider view, or interviews?
Wow.
What would be the narrative they want from an agent to put into a story?
Well, I can't speak for every journalist, but the relationship between journalists and agents is as old as the hills. So that's not new at all. I think the new bit is really just the excitement, the amount of interest in transfers, let's be honest. It drives my industry. It drives the entire industry. It's got to the point now where I've sort of joked, I've written pieces where winning the transfer window, doing well at transfers appears to be as important as doing well at the football matches and as actually winning things. So what most of my industry wants is they want transfer news. They just want tips. They want, who's your player? Where's your player going? Who's happy? Who's not? How much? They want transfer gossip. And obviously, ideally, they don't want gossip. They want transfer fact. So that is, I think, the number one. Everything else would be quite a distant second or third. I mean, I don't really do that. So if I'm talking to agents, it tends to be about this sort of drier story. So I would like people to go on the record and explain to me why the FIFA regulations are fair or not fair, how they can be improved. I might want someone to explain to me contract lengths or the tax status. So I will want an interview. I want like expert insight. But what I do is not typical. Most football journalists want transfer insight. They want those little nuggets. You don't have to go on the record. Of course you don't, because if you do, you'll get in trouble and you'll be frozen out and you won't get those stories again. So different journalists have a different set of demands. I'm doing different stories and I want you guys to go on the record and provide expert insight into your industry. Most of my colleagues just want you to tell us gossip.
Many top football agencies now have PR or marketing sections. There's a growing trend now with a lot of the football agencies. They use social media or media releases on their player deals, as you mentioned, transfer deals, to boost the profile of their clients, but also the profile of the agency. In terms of your research, do you look at those media releases or the social media of agents and agencies in order to prepare stories? Is that part what you follow, or is it more about the player, and then you find out who their agent is in terms of following up facts on your research.
A little bit. Look, it's, you know, a time and a place for that kind of thing. Like I say, I don't do the sort of bog standard agent story, which would be around transfers. You know, I've done a little bit in the past, but I now work for a company where we've got some of the best in the business at it. So I have no need to do it whatsoever. And I think those people do that. You know, if that's your speciality, you've got to be across everything. You know, you've got to be across social media, what agents are tweeting, who they're following. And some of it is really, what's it, dark arts? It's not dark arts at all. Have they stopped following people on Instagram? That's the number of times that can be a clue as to what's going on. Or players changing representation. You can often sort of see some changes on their social media. So yeah, that's useful. And you're right. As your industry has consolidated and got bigger, the amount of money that's involved, the number of stories, the amount of scrutiny on your industry, just like any other industry, yes, suddenly you require PR help as well. So that's definitely something we've noticed. And these big, big agencies, we might get onto it. I mean, it just seems like one of the trends in your industry, this consolidation trend. We're talking about big business now. We're talking about big multinational cross-border conglomerates. Having someone to pick up the phone or deal with journalists if there's something that's been written that they don't like. You know, agents are busy too. And maybe an agent might be an amazing agent, but might not be brilliant at dealing with the media. Yeah, get some professional advice there. I mean, that's, you know, your players, I'm doing like quote things now as well. So your players in the industry. So you need expert advice as well.
You mentioned transfers, and obviously everyone's interested in transfers, the fans, the journalists, sports outlets or papers on websites like The Athletic, The Guardian football section, Corriere dello Sport in Italy, France Football in France. I'll even go to Latin America or Lear in Argentina, are fascinated about player transfers and the agents involved. Do you think through this focus, especially as we've seen a lot of mega deals, has football media created the concept of super agents in terms of the profile they're featured with, who's doing the big deals? And now those super agents have become a name or a brand as much as some players themselves? Yeah.
Well, maybe. There's sort of a kind of a big chicken and egg debate there, isn't it? Whether it was us that dubbed it or and then it became that way. You know, we sort of kind of picked out a few kind of big names in your industry and that helped them get even bigger. Or it was just us belatedly realizing, no, there are some significant players in your game. But yeah, the super agent tag was just a recognition that the industry changed and there are these super powerful people who are gatekeepers, who have a sort of stable of really important clients. Just on the first bit of your question, certainly in the last 10, 15 years, transfers are just massive. I cannot stress to you, anyone that works, certainly if you're behind a paywall or if you work online, and you're, which is pretty much everyone these days, so you have good data as to who's reading, when they read, what they share, it's transfers.
If you could describe, Matt, the football agents world and industry in one word right now, what would it be and why? It's one of our seminal questions we ask a lot of guests. Okay. But
grey.
One word.
Grey.
Grey, as in vague.
And I'm going with grey just because it's a very broad range of activities that you guys do. There's so much going on. There's good bits, there's bad bits. And it is, you are in the margins. You are in the shadows. People very rarely come out. Maybe that's just the way it should be. Maybe that's the way it's designed to be. Maybe, you know, we don't want to hear from you. We shouldn't hear from you. You know, your job is to be in the background. Your job is to be conciliaries to players and to sort of be fixers. And you are brokers, right? So you're not the main men.
I think it's safe to say, Matt, the industry has made me
grey. Right, well, there you go.
Over the years, and it's made a lot of people grey. We've had several guests on who've spoken about this representative voice for agents, and I think it's a common thread that runs through it all. And hopefully we might see change at some point in the future, but that's a fingers crossed thing. And on that note, we will take a quick break from the interview with Matt and return to it in a few minutes. It was interesting to hear him use the term grey to describe the agents industry, as we have heard from several guests the term fractured or fragmented on that same question. But one of the core aspects of the fragmentation and the greyness of the agents world at the moment is summed up currently by the different implementations of FFAR, both internationally and nationally. And as the NFAR from various national football associations start to emerge, I know Peter has some more updates.
You know, I like my NFAR, National Football Agent Regulations, probably about 20, 25 that are out there. Some of them are in English, some of them you've got to translate. Today, I'm going to give some noticeable elements of national football agent regulations from three national football associations. Mexico, which I know, Jonathan, you're a big fan of Mexican football. Both of us are. Poland and FIFA's home, Switzerland. I'll start off with Mexico, and they pretty much implement what FIFA has recommended or in terms of the FIFA model for national football agent regulations, including the cap, the way the agreement should be drafted, including the obligations. But some interesting features of the Mexican national football agent regulations are the way they describe agency as the agency as in plural, an agency of agents, and an agency can be a law firm with licensed agents. I've seen quite a few of the national football agent regulations that football agents may not engage in conversations between parties in terms of trying to have that party terminate a contract prematurely. Now, that's also in the FIFA regulations, but the interesting thing about the Mexican regulations, they actually talk about statements to the media, whether by the player, but more importantly by the agent, in order to try to induce a move or get a move for a player who's contracted. That's specifically stipulated in the Mexican regulations. We know that a lot of agents possibly do that, and that's interesting in terms of Mexico highlighting that. There's some good guidance in the Mexican regulations of what needs to be uploaded. We hear a lot of agents, and I've spoken to a lot of agents who are now on the portal who are licensed, and they don't know, besides obviously their agreements with their client, being a coach or a player, what to put on the platform. The Mexican National Football Agent regulations have very good guidance, and they mention, they call it the Director of Affiliation and Registration to the Mexican Football Federation, the representation contract or any agreement or termination of it, any contract that is not a representation contract that includes other services, for example, endorsement, marketing, sponsorship, scouting, any mandates they have or collaboration agreement, and any agreement in terms of sharing income or benefits for any of their representative services, which is quite interesting. But also, and I know that you're a mediator as well, Jonathan, any conciliation agreement reached with a client or another football agent. Conciliation is a little bit different to mediation, but it's close enough. So very definitive there, the Mexicans. I'll quickly move on to Poland. Poland has just a few different nuances in their regulations. If you're going to do business in Poland, they accept your FIFA license from wherever you've obtained it. However, if you're going to operate deals in Poland, you have to create a national account on their own platform and provide all the requisite information and statements. So just because you're registered and you're uploading documents on the FIFA agents portal, in terms of any deals in Poland, you need to create a separate account on there and upload those documents. And the other interesting elements in their regulations are that the Polish FA has directed that it will assist FIFA in investigating any potential non-compliance, especially in terms of eligibility of agents to operate in Poland. So they're very firm on that. And I'll finish up with Switzerland, the home of FIFA. Now, Switzerland, you can have the FIFA license. However, to operate in Switzerland, you also need local licenses. Football agents who operate in Switzerland must also hold the corresponding canton's license relating to recruitment, a canton, which is, I would say, like a state or county within Switzerland, and also a national license where they can work cross-border. So there's a couple of licenses that you have to actually get before you can operate there. Also, a very interesting one about the cap. We know that anything over $200,000 salary, if you're representing a player, an individual on an individual employment contract, and that deal is worth $200,000 USD or its equivalent, you're entitled to 3% under the FIFA agent regs. Well, according to Swiss law, the Swiss law, the AVG, they call it, they have a limit of 5% on a first gross annual salary. So if you put a player first time in Switzerland and it's over $200,000 USD, normally, as an international agent, you'll be entitled to 3% or a Swiss agent. So you can get the other 2%, get the 3% up in the first year, and then you can get the extra 2% in the second year. So actually, it's 5% in Switzerland. Very, very interesting. And finally, I want to mention in terms of remuneration itself, there's a good definition in Switzerland about the remuneration. It talks about financial compensation for employment. It's obviously the negotiated employment contract, which is the base salary. sign-on fee and any payables in certain conditions, conditional payments, in other words, like a loyalty bonus or performance bonus. However, also in terms of the gross financial compensation, Switzerland also recognises that any vehicle package, accommodation, or even telephony services, internet or a phone or a computer given to a player are also considered as calculation of the gross financial compensation. So when I talk about gross financial compensation, I'm talking about what's the salary and the add-ons. So is it under 200,000 or over? As part of that, it's not just the money you make as a wage or the bonuses, but also the vehicle, the accommodation, and telephone services that are given to you by the club as a package. That is the gross amount that the cap applies. So very complicated, but quite interesting. Now, we'll go back into the interview with Matt Slater. The Bosman decision was a seminal event in football, and of course it affected the agents world because it opened up the transfer market.
As I mentioned in the intro, the Bosman film on BT Sport was great. Now, that signified a monumental change in football. What do you think has been the biggest story from an agent perspective so far? And do you envisage anything in the future?
Well, I do think that Bosman ruling, I mean, it, for fans that are sort of relatively young, they won't get it. They won't get how monumental it was. But it really did change. It's a classic case of unintended consequences as well. No one could have foreseen, you know, certainly the legal team, certainly John Mark Bosman himself, could never have foreseen what would happen. It took 2 or 3 years. It went through the courts, went all the way to the highest court in Europe. And not only did that change, so we got the Bosman, you end of a contract, you can go for a free transfer. Your previous employer is owed nothing. But also, as a consequence of that rule, it changed the restrictions on the number of foreign players you could have, because that was an absolute key part of the football landscape then. And this was an application of EU law, nationality-based restrictions. So once you change that, though, once you change those two things at the same time, free agency, end of a contract, you can go. Right. Oh, that's interesting. You know, a big shift towards play power, a big shift towards in the contractual relationships between players and clubs. And at the same time, no, you don't have to have only four foreigners or five foreigners or whatever it is. You could have as many as you like. Boom. The two things at once, it just suddenly big shift towards big TV market leagues, because that's where the power, the money, they could now use their money to hoover up talent. And that restriction on the number of foreigners you could use was a sort of break. It enabled medium-sized and smaller markets to compete. Without that safety net, the explosion of the big five leagues, in particular the English league, and then giving players a lot more contractual freedom was like rocket fuel to that. Bosman just unleashed these kind of market forces that totally changed European football. And you can look at Bosman and you can track it all the way through to things like the European Super League and just the dominance of the Premier League now. So that's the biggest story. That's the biggest story of my lifetime in professional football. And of course, it's a massive story for agents, because agents, you know, profited off that, fueled it, the rise of the super agent. Just the rise in wages and transfer fees, so much of it can be traced back to Bosman. So it's unequivocally, you put me on the spot. I can't really think of what would be second or the third most important. I guess it would be something like the reaction to some of that is what we're talking about with the whole FIFA regulations. It's taken a long time. FIFA has, chopped and changed about how it wants to deal with you guys and how it wants to regulate you. And it's now sort of almost decided again to try to regulate you and sort of curtail and curb some of those forces that were unleashed in the mid-90s by Bosman. Bosman changed everything.
You've mentioned it there. We're trying to limit our exposure and how much we discuss FFAR. However much we try to get away from it, Matt, we just can't. We've tried for weeks to get away. But in your opinion, from those you've spoken to, how effective do you think, as it stands, the current reforms on FFAR will be?
I just don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
we don't know from one week to the next.
But I completely understand, because I was at some of these sort of key moments, you know, where Infantino, I think, was it 2017 when he did his first speech about, you know, it was all off the back of the Pogba deal, wasn't it? That was a sort of a, you know, a pivotal moment, the kind of 41 million, was it 41 million from that one deal? It did seem like this particularly egregious moment where almost everybody, probably apart from agents, was like, oh, right, hold on, that's excessive. And then Infantino, when he came in, you know, I think it was 2017. It was one of his earlier congresses. I don't think it was 2016, because it was his first one. Right, that's it. I am going to do something about this. It was only 2 years, really, after FIFA had given up trying to do something about it. It was like, oh, we're not going to bother regulating agents because it's just too complicated. So away you go. FIFA, within 2 years, was now sort of saying, oh, no, we do actually need to regulate agents. Now, that was 6 years ago. And you all know better than me whether there has been a proper consultation. It looks like there's been a consultation, certainly the appearance of a consultation, because there has been redrafts and there have been conferences. I've been writing about these regulations for a while. So again, there is the appearance of consultation. I know some of the people in your industry feel very strongly that that's all it was, the appearance of consultation. You know, are they going to work? Well, it depends. Nothing ever really works 100%, does it? In any sphere, it's the caps on how much you can earn, I think, are going to be the key. And if they do come in, if they are the ECJ or whoever else looks at this, whatever court looks at it eventually decides, no, that's fine. That is fine. And yes, the governing bodies can do that to you. It is a proportionate and a reasonable thing for them to do. Well, then it'd be the reaction. This is just human nature, right? Okay, fine. All right, you've imposed that regulation. So how are we going to get around it? What will be the unintended consequences, this restriction on how much you guys can earn? Will everyone just go, oh, right, okay. Well, we just have to be a bit more creative then, aren't we? And will anything change?
I just want to focus on the international business. Basically, agents now operate internationally with this new license. I think the exam was held in about 150 plus countries with various regulations and cultures in different parts of the world. Looking ahead, what do you foresee as the most significant trends or shifts in the football agent industry in the next few years? And how do you think this will affect the broader football ecosystem worldwide, taking into account, obviously, what's happening in Saudi Arabia as well, yeah. MLS. We're seeing a lot of movements in other countries. What do you foresee in terms of trends and shifts in the next few years?
Well, you mentioned one, a big one, which is going to sort of, I think, impact anyone that works in the football industry. It's already doing it, but it's going to, I think, have an even bigger say going forward. It's just Saudi Arabia and the rise, you know, their ambitions for sport, their ambitions for football in particular, the rise and development of that league. So that's one's going to have a big impact. And then as that league develops and becomes a more significant player, how you then deal with it from a financial fair play point of view, you know, does financial fair play work if there are these big actors outside it that can have a skewing impact on it? And it doesn't have to be, you know, conspiracy theory stuff. I mean, the perception of that is is there. But even just sort of inadvertently, even just sort of Saudi Arabia wanting to buy five players, that's going to have a big impact on European football teams. So that's something to kind of keep an eye on. So, you know, Saudi Pro League, does it get past, if you like, the Chinese Super League stage and become a significant player going forward? Does it become a sort of a genuine top 10 global league? And then MLS as well, you know. So just to keep an eye on those leagues that are outside the tent at the moment.
I just want to pivot a little bit to women's football.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How do you perceive the role and influence of agents in the what we call burgeoning women's football industry? Obviously, here in Australia and New Zealand, we had the Women's World Cup and a very successful tournament, great profile, great advertisement for the sport, and just really genuine, fantastic events, and just showcased all the talent that's out there in women's football. What unique challenges, opportunities do you think this presents in terms of women's football and the role and influence of agents in this space?
Yeah, well, it's just a whole new industry, isn't it? It's a whole new sort of segment for you, for all of us, right? So it reminds me of, I used to write about other sports. I've been almost exclusively football for the last few years, but when I was at the BBC and the Press Association, I used to write about rugby, cricket, all sorts, right? And in those industries, there are agents, right? But there are fewer of them, and they tend to sort of earn a bit less. They certainly have less profile. I did cycling as well. There are cycling agents, but they don't do transfers in those sports. Not really. They wait for their contracts to finish, and then it's a much more, if you like, purer model, right? It is contract. Okay, I'm out of where am I going to go next? And okay, and the agent then is very clearly working for the athlete, and the job is to sort of go off and find my client the best possible job I can find them, right? And that might be the best team, the best situation, the best pathway to becoming the player they want to be. You know, in cycling, it could be the best place for me to win a race, because the key thing is to win races. You know, that's what brings the money and the sponsors. You know, in cricket or rugby, it could be, you know, I wanted to go to Japan or France because that's where, you know, there's bigger pay there. You know, there's a World Cup coming. It's a good place to be. I mean, these are all the conversations I remember with agents in those sports at that time. It just seemed to be a lot more like agency. Right, I'm actually providing a service to my client. Now, maybe women's football, where it is, as you say, a new industry, the sums of money are not quite as big yet, there's an opportunity here for sort of the football agency world to kind of reset a bit and just go back to sort of like old-fashioned consulting and agency. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm being a bit naive and optimistic there, and very quickly it will go exactly the same way as men's football. I don't know. But it does seem to me, you're right, it is a completely new opportunity. Well, completely new, but it's an exciting new space. Progress is obvious. I suspect it's probably a slightly happier, cleaner place at the moment. Whether it stays that way, I don't know.
Is there any article in The Athletic written by yourself or one of your colleagues focusing on agents and or player deals or transfer deals that our listeners should look out for?
Well, so yeah, you know, like I say, the transfer stuff is almost constant, but we're outside of a window for the main league we follow, the Premier League. So, you know, come the next window, if it's transfer stuff is your thing, then my colleague David Ornstein is one of the gurus. Another colleague of mine, Dan Sheldon, he's been writing an awful lot on the FIFA regulations and the furore over the exams and the mess and the nonsense of that. So Dan Sheldon has done like a series of good pieces on that.
And of course, when you've finished listening to the Agents Angle podcast, you've also got the Athletic podcast.
No, we've got a few. Yeah, yeah. So yeah. There's one in the morning that's sort of bite-sized, which is pretty good, doing quite well. And there's a sort of a longer one that they do, I think, three or four times a week.
Brilliant. Just to finish, Matt, and I don't know whether you want to answer this question as with your journalist hat on or your football fans hat on, maybe both. If you had one wish relating to the football agents industry, what would it be?
Oh, well, I'll try a bit of both then. So I suppose from a journalist point of view, it would be more transparency and a sort of kind of an improvement in standards. But I'd say that about my own industry. I'd say that about directors of football or managers or owners, right? I think the industry in general has tolerated, we've allowed it to tolerate bad practice for way too long. It's just not been as good and as professional as it should be. And some of that is because there hadn't been the scrutiny on it before, there hadn't been the money, hadn't been as important, it hadn't been considered as important as business or politics. And of course, it's the old gag, it's the old joke, it's the most important of the least important things. Now, that's what I would like. But I don't want to sound like I'm sort of picking on agents. That's a more sort of general point about the type of work that we should expect from the people that work in the sports industry should just be better. And you make things better by sharing best practice and being accountable and transparent. So that would be sort of a very sort of general point. And I think from a fan, this might annoy some of your listeners. I mean, I think there is a sort of sense, and it must come from somewhere. I don't think it's just a sort of cliche or some sort of conspiracy against agents. There is this sense that some agents have been greedy and aren't providing much of a service and are taking money out of the game. Now, I know that's sort of a bit of a nebulous concept, and, you know, aren't football journalists taking money out of the game? Well, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe we all are, right? But it's the sort of disproportionate element to it. And what's the value that you bring? Yes, an agent doing a good job for a young player, keeping them out of that bad experience or successfully getting them out of that failing team or that manager that didn't recognize them or was misusing them and getting them on the right path again. There are lots of examples where an agent can genuinely add value for their client, but for the bigger picture, right? For if we want to watch good football, fair football, an agent has a role. It's just, I think there has been, I suppose it's because of my privileged position as a journalist, I'm just aware of some stories where I'm just like, Jesus, an agent earned how much? And they did what? Sorry. I don't want to, there's one that crossed my desk about a month or so ago where it just sort of summed up the worst of your industry for me. It was an agent who was angry and he's actually, I can't sort of reveal too many details because I think it's a live case, but he had provided some advice to a club chairman about a player. And the club chairman, and it was a series of WhatsApp messages, had gone, yeah, all right, okay, thanks. I'll mention that to our director of football. And it read to me, as a neutral, that this chairman was being polite, was not fobbing this guy off, was just being polite, and probably knew, of course I'll tell our data, our director of football, our scouts about this player. Of course they know this player. You know, anyone that watches matches today knows this player's good. And then, you know, 2-3 months later, said club moves for said player. And the agent is up in arms going, well, hold on a minute. I played a role in that transfer. And you're like, well, okay, that's one reading of those WhatsApp messages. But another reading is that guy was just being polite. And this guy wants some ludicrous amount of money. I was thinking, you've done less work on this transfer than I do on a typical story. And you want a six-figure sum. This is nonsense, and you're not helping your industry. So
in that case, if that's the case, there'd be a lot of scouts putting forward a hell of a lot of claims going back many, many years.
Yeah, well, so look, I picked a you know, again, a sort of, you know, bad cases don't make good law. That was it's just one that's crossed my desk, and again, I shouldn't tar you all with the same brush, of course, because I wouldn't want people to tar me with, you know, I read some nonsense in the Mail or the Sun the other day. You're all rubbish. You all make stuff up. And it's like, well, more often than not, sometimes we're told something that we then didn't check out and we ran with it because we were pressured for time, or, you know, maybe we shouldn't have run that one because it wasn't a great piece of info. But that's what it is 99 times out of 100. And in your line of work, you know, one agent trying their luck on a deal they had very little to do is not fair and indicative of what the work of most of you do. So I don't know. You know, I just think, if we could all just be a bit more reasonable about the demands we make and the amount of money we should earn and the value that we add, I think we're more realistic, it'd be a better place.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your insights. Thank you for a fresh perspective on the agent side of the industry and football as a whole. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future.
Yeah, lovely talking to you.
And you, Matt, take care.
That was an excellent insights and perspective from Matt. And it just shows that agents must work with the media and ensure that they promote their clients effectively.
I think we could have chatted to Matt for hours on various aspects. Like, that's a very short snippet. And a lot of people use the frame "a student of the game" when they're referring to the likes of coaches. But I think Matt's knowledge goes beyond the actual game on the pitch and goes into the industry, the socioeconomic aspects and the cultural aspects. So what we're going to do, we're going to release the full interview later in the week for those who want to listen on the broader aspects of the football industry, even beyond that of agents. I think there's some great insights, observations and thoughts from Matt in there that people will find interesting.
Yeah, I think some listeners would want to hear the full interview. And we've had to, in terms of this podcast, we've had to edit back, but we're putting the full interview on as a special episode for those who are keen to listen.
A key point of FFAR that we have referenced on many occasions in previous episodes of The Agent's Angle is the importance of the protection of minors and vulnerable persons with regards to agent regulations. And these are some of the good and welcome facets of FFAR. But on this topic, one article that caught our attention a few weeks ago, but with the deluge of FFAR material, we've unfortunately had to put it back on a few occasions, was entitled "Sampoli to Avoid Youth Football Agents." And it's from the 24th of September, 23, by Matt Ford in the DW German media outlet, excuse my pronunciation, the Deutsche Welle. And whilst this article has been covered by others in recent weeks, whether in personal posts, articles, blogs, podcasts, and via other media channels, many of those I have observed have either jumped to the headline and focused on that, and or got swept away in the ethos of San Pauli and their maverick approach. As you know, Peter, I love a maverick approach when it's based on good intentions, raising awareness, fairness, and seeking improvement. But a lot of this coverage has somewhat missed the point for me in many ways. And in all honesty, this article is somewhat inconclusive.
It is. It's interesting. St. Pauli, a club in Hamburg, they've announced that they no longer deal with player agents and private agencies in their youth football section. This comes, I suppose, to light, as the article says, and it's a bit unclear that young players are under the spotlight and St. Pauli want to move away from commodification of youth football because they see that it's becoming like professional adult football with their youth players. And they no longer want to work with player agents in terms of giving those player agents who to move on, who not to. They want to actually focus on cultivating direct relationship with individual players, maybe mentoring, personal development, maybe even having more fun instead of just focus straight on the pathway where academies and maybe agents are focused on that professional pathway. The article does say that pathways are limited. As we know in England, there's a lot of research of how many players are let go by academies. The same thing in Germany, where this article mentions that only one in 40 players in the under-19 Bundesliga are handed a professional contract. That's according to the German paper and figures quoted by Spiegel. However, this article is really about St. Pauli and a shift in philosophy in youth football away from the commercialization, I said commodification earlier, commercialization of pathways and pressures of pathways that they see that agents and academies influence.
Yeah, St. Paul is an interesting club. It's got its own unique approach, and I recommend anybody having a look and understanding what the club's trying to do and what it's tried to do for many years. Now, I've reached out to the people referenced in this article, both at the club as well as the writer, but nothing back at this time. But as we've said, there's so many unanswered questions in reference to this article. That's if you actually take the time to look beyond the headline and that aura and much publicised ethos of the club in question. The first thing is, if the club are referencing a player under the age of 16, taking into account academic years for things like pro contracts and scholarships, I would say this is a non-story, as in many countries, as well as in FIFA regulations, it stipulates players under the age of 16 are not permitted to have agent representation anyway. And this has been the case for quite some time in many jurisdictions. There are some exceptions, which you referenced a couple of weeks ago, Peter. I think it was Croatia where you mentioned the minimum age of representation there under their new national football agent regulations. So in the case of those where it's forbidden for a player under the age of 16 to have an agent, we have to realise that some people may be asking the question, was the club breaching regulations on this before? Or really, is this a non-story and a PR exercise, not necessarily by the club, but maybe in the media? Next one is, does this preclude the player and their family seeking legal advice, which may involve a lawyer stroke agent? Many lawyers are agents. Many agents have a legal background if the player is seeking to join the club. Some may say that by a club not allowing youth players to have agents, a club may be doing that for the wrong reasons. In fact, potentially exploiting their position and the leverage they have as a club. Another one, will the club be extending this to agents acting on behalf of the club? Personally, I wouldn't be surprised if St. Pauli had a policy to not pay agent fees like other clubs do. I don't know it for a fact, but it may be the case given their club ethos and their approach. Yes, the club are making a stance here, but are they not also limiting their recruitment of the best youth players or even local players who might be youth players? Now, one for yourself and the lawyers out there, Peter. A player may be able to choose to represent themselves both under agent regulations past and present, and quite rightly so. But if I am not mistaken, in many instances, a club is not permitted to influence or make an offer to a player subject to who their representatives, their agents, are, or even whether they have representation. What will the club do if after signing with the club, the player then signs with an agent? I'm pretty sure they can't prohibit a player having an agent once signed. Again, that's one for the lawyers, but I don't think they can do that. And probably the most telling element at this time, as we know in Germany, currently there doesn't seem to be any football agent regulations as such, with the injunction in place and the link to Germany as declared by FIFA. And thus it reverts to national law and legislation. So is this a sign of things to come with clubs in Germany writing their own agent rules? I'm not saying it's good or bad if they do, but it has to be for the right reasons and not the wrong ones. So yes, an interesting article, a stance to be applauded if some elements are true, but also an incredibly subjective article with lots of unlisted variables. Definitely not one to take on face value based on the headline alone, or a desire and romantic utopia of what some may consider pure football.
This is a very interesting article, as we mentioned. What you mentioned about lawyers and how they see this, I mean, clubs, in terms of the regulatory space right now, have to treat every agent transparently. They cannot influence agent selection or who the player chooses to have as an agent or not. Now, we know with youth football, it's a different type of area. You know, in different countries, there's scholarships, there's academy contracts, there's the old training apprenticeships, there's training contracts. They're all traditions in youth football, and the offerings of being able to go as pro. Now, what St. Pauli are doing is very unique because there's been a huge expansion in the interest of youth football, and agents are part of that. However, you also mentioned, and I agree, that agent regulation in Germany is in a state of flux. So St. Pauli's initiative, if the article's correct, is a very interesting move. If there's a vacuum in regulation, in order to be able to take a different position in relation to agents in Germany, maybe they can, if there is a vacuum in agent regulation and how players can deal with agents in Germany. It's also, I think, a philosophical, as I mentioned before. If St. Pauli want to move in this direction, the guidance has shifted to the club and not to the agent in terms of how they want to guide the players. The question is, for me, is this a reaction by St. Pauli to some isolated cases where maybe agents or private academies, as the articles mentions, may have affected a certain number of young players of theirs? Or it is a new policy employed by the club because there's a vacuum or a gap in regulations? We don't know. Maybe we'll follow up in the future, but very interesting approach by St. Pauli.
I think we've seen this approach done before by other clubs and even by a national association to effectively ban agents. And in my experience, it just doesn't work. They would do better, and I've laboured for many, many years, clubs would do better in having an agent's policy and making consistent in how they work with agents and making that well known. In all these years, I've only come across, in England, probably two clubs who've had such a policy. And I think it's something that clubs need to look at rather than banning agents, because the bad agents will just find a way around it and it will exclude the good agents.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of clubs offer hospitality to agents as guests. Other clubs don't allow agents training. There's a whole different gamut of different approaches. You're right. I would say that would be innovative if clubs have, just like they have a privacy policy, they have well-being, child safety, all these other policies, maybe a policy of how they want to deal with agents. And I don't mean a policy where you have the club agents negotiating deals on behalf of the club. What we're talking about here is when agents want to visit the club or look at players or protocols, they should have maybe an agent policy or protocol in place of how they deal with agents in a very transparent manner, and have a sort of conduct code of what agents can do when dealing with the club and their players and their officials and their coaches. That's a very interesting point, Jonathan. And on that note, we've come to the end of this episode. Fascinating discussion with Matt Slater. Really provided some fantastic insights of what's going on and how a lot of the top journalists are seeing agents and how they link them into the transfer window. Now, if you enjoyed this episode or all of our episodes, please give us a like, follow us. Please refer your colleagues or friends to our podcast. We always aim to keep good content, updated content, and also have guests. And if anyone wants to nominate a guest or an interesting topic, please email us. And yes, we will be talking, and a lot of people have asked, about the Saudi Pro League. It is on our to-do list for the podcast. That's bye from me, Jonathan.
Yes, folks. Thanks for listening. Keep an eye out for the extended Matt Slater interview. And we'll see you next week. Take care. Bye.
The purpose of the Agents Angle podcast is to provide news, information, and facilitate discussion on regulatory matters, policies, business trends, and issues affecting football agents worldwide. The opinions and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only and should never be considered legal or professional advice. Furthermore, the views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Thank you for listening.